ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 13 एंटाइटल्ड ब्रह्मा स्टीलिंग द बॉयज एंड काफ्स टेक्स्ट नंबर 45।
तम्यं तमोवन्नैहारम् खद्योतर्चिरिवाहनी महातितार मायेषां निहन्ति आत्मनि युञ्जितः।
ट्रांसलेशन: As the darkness of snow on a dark night and the light of a glowworm in the light of the day have no value, the mystic power of an inferior person who tries to use it against a person of great power is unable to accomplish anything. Indeed, the power of that inferior person is diminished.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
When one wants to supersede a superior power, one's own inferior power becomes ludicrous. Just as a glowworm in the daytime and snow at night have no value, Brahma's mystic power became worthless in the presence of Krishna. For greater mystic power condemns inferior mystic power. On a dark night, the darkness produced by snow has no meaning. The glowworm appears very important at night, but in the daytime, its glow has no value. Whatever little value it has is lost. Similarly, Brahma became insignificant in the presence of Krishna's mystic power. Krishna's Maya was not diminished in value, but Brahma's Maya was condemned. Therefore, one should not try to exhibit one's insignificant opulence before a greater power.
Hare Krishna. Seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees, especially exalted disciples of Srila Prabhupada, Mahatma Prabhu and all others. You can speak a few words glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. Especially the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is such an important aspect of our spiritual life. Being unqualified to speak about it and to get a verse that actually speaks about disqualification is quite apt. This verse, I'll just read the translation again. It says, as the darkness of a snow on a dark night and the light of a glowworm in the light of day have no value, the mystic power of an inferior person who tries to use it against a person of greater power is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. So these two examples that have been given here are very interesting, because the snow by itself is colorless. The snow gets its color because of the sunlight. And in the dark of the night, the snow has practically no color. So if the snow is thinking that itself is significant in the dark of the night, practically nobody notices it. The glory of the snow is in the daylight. But the snow by itself has no glory unless the sun is shining on it. And, you know, the second example is of glowworms. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes that why two examples have been given. The first example itself was enough, but Shukadeva Goswami wanted to re-emphasize this fact. And the glowworm example is more appropriate than the first example of the snow. So the glowworm, why do glowworms glow? The fact is that all glowworms don't glow. Only female glowworms glow, and they glow to attract the male glowworms. So, but of course, the concept of attraction is also a very dangerous concept, because the male glowworm is programmed to think that anything that glows is female. And unfortunately, they glow, they get attracted to the glow of the light also, or glow of fire also. So anything that glows is not necessarily attractive, but it can be dangerous also. So here, the example that is given is that the glowworms glow, and they are attractive, definitely. But when they glow compared to the sun, is nothing. In fact, they can't glow more than they are allowed to glow by Krishna. You know, just imagine a glowworm is trying its best to glow. You know, naturally it has some substance within it by which it is kind of emitting that light to at the tail end. So now if the glowworm decides to put unlimited endeavor to produce more of that glowing substance, how much will it be able to produce? If it really stretches itself, really pushes itself to glow, you can't just glow, you know, by your wish. You have to be allowed to glow. So similarly, when a living entity is exhibiting some opulence that Krishna has given him, he cannot exhibit that opulence more than Krishna allows him to. Beyond that, he will harm himself only. So unfortunately, in this world, when people try to glow or shine out beyond what they are allowed to, then they create harm to others also. Because their desire to glow is overpowering the ability to grow. And when you compare the glowworm to the sun, it is explained that, you know, just the size of the sun is so huge that almost 1 million Earths can fit into the sun. That is the kind of size that the sun has. And 1 second of the ray of the sun, of one ray of the sun, just 1 second of the one ray of the sun, the kind of energy that that sun emits, is equivalent to all the energy that human beings have consumed from time immemorial till now. This 1 second of sun's energy of one ray of the sun. So now you can imagine the glowworm, what it is trying to compete with. You know, so the amount of glow that the glowworm emits, even if it emits it lifelong, whatever its small life is insignificant compared to the glow of the sun. So Brahmaji is compared to the glowworm here, and Krishna is compared to the sun. You can imagine what kind of a comparison this is. There cannot be probably a more apt comparison than this one. And the firefly in the night is seeming to be very important. But in the day, the glow of the firefly has practically no significance, no importance at all. So Prabhupada in his purport is mentioning that one's power becomes condemned when one tries to defeat a superior power. What it means is that every human being is supposed to play his role within the creation of the Lord, and he cannot be competing with the power of the Lord. So unfortunately, when one competes with the power of the Lord, then his power becomes condemned. Just like if you see a ballet dance or an orchestra. So in an orchestra, everyone who is performing is supposed to perform at a certain level. Now, somebody may be proud of his ability to perform, ability to play. Now, just to exhibit his power or his enthusiasm to play, if he starts playing really loud, if he starts playing really more wildly, just to kind of stand out, then what happens to such a person is that he's thrown out of the orchestra because he doesn't fit into the rhythm of the person who is directing the orchestra. So Krishna is the director of the orchestra of this world. And each one has to play his drum, has to play his flute, has to play his, you know, different instruments in a way that fits into the plan, which is the master plan of Krishna. And each one is chosen for that role by Krishna only. So if somebody has an ability to play flute or a drum or a different musical instrument, Krishna gives him that role. And he is supposed to play only that role. He cannot play some other role. And in spite of playing that role, he has to play it in a way which is significant only, which is in alignment with Krishna's desire. So in this world, every person is trying to become significant, you know. So if you try to see it from a perspective of the way in which the world operates, you know, an organization, a spiritual organization or a material organization, there is something called the law of significance, which actually means, you know, the understanding of what the law of significance is, that one, that means the number one or one individual, is too small a number to achieve greatness. That means, actually, if you see it from a practical point of view, is there anything in this world, anything whether it be in any organization, whether it be any achievement or it's sports endeavor, any endeavor in this world, is it possible that one person can achieve it? Actually, if you analyze, nothing is possible for one person alone. If you think of anything significant or insignificant, big or small, one person cannot do anything much. It has to be a team effort. It has to be a group of people doing it together. And, you know, even if it's a, if somebody is a sportsman and he wins an Olympic championship, it's not that he has won because he has tried or he, it's his effort. It's an effort of a whole team. There's a coach, there is his parents, there are his friends who encourage him. So there are so many people who make one person a winner. So therefore, when one thinks that I am myself significant, then, you know, he's in danger. So the understanding is that we may be good, one individual may be good, but you're not that good to achieve a perfect goal. In the story of the pastime of Samudra Manthan, this whole story, what it starts with, it starts with one person thinking that I am big. Who's that one person? Indra. He thinks, I am big. And when Durvas Muni comes to him and gives him that garland, he thinks, what is a garland given by a weird sage? He just gives that garland to his elephant. So when one person, when Indra, he thinks that I am big, I am something, I am significant, he offends Durvas Muni. So this pastime starts with thinking that one person thinking that I am significant. And where does the pastime end? The pastime ends by everyone understanding that no one is significant. Only Krishna is significant. So if you study that whole pastime, the whole pastime is amazingly portraying this fact that we depend on Krishna for everything. And in fact, that is one of those very rare pastimes in which Krishna appears again and again and again and again, showing that you are insignificant in every level. You know, one can accept that I'm insignificant at some levels. But how can one be insignificant at every level? Krishna, in the beginning of the pastime, just see how many times Krishna is there in that one story. Below, he is as a tortoise. Above, he is as, you know, the thousand-armed form holding the mountain. Between, he is the rope, the Vasuki. He is mode of ignorance in the Vasuki snake. He is a mode of passion in the demons. He is a mode of goodness in the demigods. He stands as Ajita, you know, helping in churning of the Mandara mountain. And in addition to that, he comes as Mohini Murti in the end to get the nectar also. You want to divide. So that means dividing nectar, dividing a pot of nectar is not a big deal. That is the most insignificant, service. Anybody can do it. But even that they couldn't do, the demigods and demons. So Krishna is trying to show how we may think that we are significant, but actually we are insignificant without the help of Krishna. So the first aspect of how to live in a team, how to work in a team, how to live in a society, in an organization, is understand the fact that I am insignificant and I am needed as long as I am ready to be a part of the team, ready to be a part of a group. And, you know, when you're ready to be a part of the group, you have to be ready to sacrifice your individual, characteristics. Like when you put sugar in sweet rice, the sugar cannot say, I will still want to be crystal. The sugar has to lose itself to sweeten the whole sweet rice. So similarly, when one is living in a world which is created by Krishna, especially if he has to be Krishna conscious, then he has to be ready to understand that I am insignificant. And the second aspect is that what is more important than your role is the goal that one has to achieve. So in a spiritual organization, in a spiritual community, if every individual thinks what role I am playing and forgetting what goal we are trying to achieve, then it creates a very bad effect in a spiritual organization. It creates a bad taste. So the goal one has to achieve as a unit is more important than one's individual role. And sometimes one's individual role has to be sacrificed, keeping the goal in mind. Like for example, in the story of Ramanujacharya, I was just in Srirangam. So this amazing story, it just touched my heart so much. The story of this personality called Kuresh, the disciple of Ramanujacharya. Now Kuresh was not an ordinary man. He was the first disciple of Ramanujacharya. And by this time, Ramanujacharya had thousands of disciples. Just imagine what kind of a personality. 800 sannyas disciples, you know, 12,000 brahmachari disciples, thousands and thousands of householder disciples. And Kuresh was the first disciple out of all those. You can imagine what a role this person is playing, you know. And not just that he was the first disciple, but also that he was the greatest scholar. He had a photographic memory. Whatever he read, he could remember it as it is, lifelong. Now, with that kind of an ability and that kind of a position, why would Suresh not have the desire to be the greatest? But when Ramanujacharya's life was in danger, when King Kolutunga called Ramanuja, everyone knew that he had a bad intention. He wanted to kill Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya's body. So Kuresh told Ramanuja that I want to exchange your dress with my dress. Kuresh was a simple householder, he was wearing white, and Ramanujacharya was a sannyasi. So Ramanujacharya didn't agree in the beginning, but then Kuresh forced him. Just imagine, here is a disciple who's trying to force his spiritual master to go beyond the role and focus on the goal. Ramanuja, the role he was playing was a spiritual master, sannyasi. But the goal was to help thousands of people elevate themselves in spiritual life. So Kuresh was playing the role of a disciple. He was the role of a grihastha, householder. But his goal was to help his spiritual master help thousands of people achieve Krishna. So Kuresh was forcing his spiritual master to change his role, focus on the goal. So many times in spiritual organizations, in a community of where we are practicing spiritual life, the tendency is to focus on one's individual role and forgetting the goal of the organization as a whole. And here Kuresh, he gave up his own practical, comfortable life. He went to Kolutunga and as expected, he lost his eyes. And when he came back, Ramanujacharya was actually shocked seeing that his own disciple sacrificed his eyes for his sake. But the whole focus on this particular story is that Kuresh was not interested in himself. Kuresh was interested in helping a greater community of people. So Brahmaji, when he was thinking about his personal role as a creator, he forgot Krishna's role as the creator of the creators. And more than that, he forgot what is his goal in life. So sometimes one's focus on the role or the role that he's playing completely becomes a barrier in one's focusing on the goal of spiritual life. Power, position, respect, adoration sometimes can be roles that one has to play in a spiritual organization, or roles that one has to play in society. But if the leader gets absorbed in the role and forgets the goal, then the leader can create a calamity. So here, Krishna is personally showing how a leader who is not just a leader of the whole creation in a material aspect, but he is a leader of a sampradaya. He's a leader of the founder acharya of the Brahma Madhva sampradaya. He's the most important prominent person in the sampradaya. So if a person who is the most important person in the sampradaya behaves like that, how can we expect the followers to not behave like that? So Krishna is trying to tell Brahmaji, don't focus on your role, focus on the goal. And, one time there was a conference. And this was a conference of peace, how to achieve peace in this world. And here were some of the most important leaders of the world coming together. This was before the conference, they had a meeting of how the flow of the conference will happen, who will speak first, who will speak second, what will be the sequence. So now, in that meeting, each one had to present what he is going to speak, he or she is going to speak, in zest. And then they will decide who will fit in where. So the goal of the conference was how to achieve peace in this world. And they all came together, and each one presented his own, what he's going to speak. And then, these people, they started fighting among each other, who will get the prime slot to speak.
And then one of them in that conference, he was thinking, what is our goal? Our goal is to achieve peace for the world. And in a conference, in a pre-meeting, to help people achieve peace, we have forgotten the goal. We are fighting with each other. And then he was given one of the most important slots. Then he realized that there is somebody better than him with much more powerful points than him, and a one who can actually create alignment in the whole conference. And he got up in the middle of the whole meeting and he said, I'm going to exchange my position, my slot with this person who has a better point. As soon as he said that, everybody realized that they have forgotten the goal. And they're just focusing on their role as, you know, prominent speakers. So here, if you think that you are the entire picture, then you'll forget the big picture. So understanding the bigger picture is important than thinking that you're the picture. So sometimes in focusing on oneself, one's own abilities, one's own desires, one's own aspirations, we forget that we are in an organization where we have to help thousands of people get connected to Krishna. So unfortunately, even within a spiritual organization where one is supposed to be broad, one can become narrow. Where one's supposed to think deeper, one can become selfish and self-interested. So if one has to actually reach one's potential, and you know, then one has to really be able to go this one step extra to, you know, sacrifice one's personal goal to focus on the one's personal role to focus on the goal. In fact, the same pastime of Samudra Manthan, there is the later aspect. As soon as the Samudra Manthan starts, the poison comes out, the halahal comes out. And immediately, as soon as the poison comes out, Lord Shiva is ready. And then there's a discussion between Shiva and Parvati Devi. Now, Parvati has a wife, she's worried. What will happen to her husband if he goes and drinks poison? And at that point, Lord Shiva tells Parvati that every human being has to try to endeavor to help society. So Lord Shiva told Parvati, my service to the society is that I'm ready to sacrifice myself. Lord Shiva goes, drinks the poison. And then when the nectar comes out, you never find Lord Shiva in the line. So it's very interesting that here is a person who is the reason for which these people are all living to be able to share the nectar. And that person is not interested in the nectar, only interested in the poison. What does it teach us? It teaches us that Lord Shiva is a person who is focused on the goal. He's not focused on what he gets from the role he plays to achieve that goal. So even while you're having a role to play, you cannot be only focused on your gain or your result, but you have to be focused on how you can actually help the world in your service to Krishna, and not just be focused on what will I get by helping the world in my service to Krishna. Like in the Niti Shastra, there is a very nice shloka which actually talks about how the moon is so much focused on giving its light to the world that it forgets the poke marks that are there on its own face. You know, sometimes one can really be focused on one's own defects and forget to serve the world. So the moon is focused on giving light to the world and it just forgets its own defects. This is seva, this is service. Ananta Shesh, Shesh Nag, he is holding the universe on his head. And while he's holding the universe, it's pain. Now to hold a small stone, a small brick in one's hand for days and days and days and days together, you know, it can practically break your hands. So the weight may be very insignificant. But if you hold that weight for a long duration of time, any weight can become significant. So Sheshanag, for Sheshanag, that weight of the millions of universes is insignificant. But just imagine Sheshanag has to hold that weight forever. It's a painful situation, but Sheshanag is ready to tolerate the pain to support the world, to give his service to Krishna. So the sun, the situation of the sun planet, you know, is that the sun burns itself to give light to others. But if you are burning yourself, you get hurt. You feel the pain. But the sun doesn't focus on its own pain because it is focusing on giving light to others. So here, Krishna is telling Brahmaji that Brahmaji has to focus not on what he gets from the role that he's playing,
but focus on the role itself so that he can help achieve the common goal. So Brahmaji has the most important person in the Sampradaya, the most important person in the universe. He cannot be focusing on how important he is, but he has to be focusing on how important a service he has. So everyone has to contribute to society in helping society, forgetting one's own pains and pleasures. And what will inspire, you know, different people to work together, especially in a spiritual community? There are about 5 different reasons what will inspire us to work together, to remain together and to function in our service to Krishna. The first thing is that the leader of the community, the leader of the spiritual unit, has to point out the bigger picture. And everybody else who is following the leader has to see if their individual actions, thoughts, and words align with that picture. Because what happens is the leader points out the bigger picture, but each individual in the organization has his own picture. So his picture is not matching with the bigger picture of the leader. So first of all, every person in a community who is actually growing together has to understand the bigger picture that the leader is trying to point out. Srila Prabhupada has laid down the bigger picture forever for ISKCON as an organization. And every individual within the society of ISKCON has to follow the bigger picture. First of all, understand that bigger picture and then follow it. Many times, with our small petty desires to show that our picture is nice, we try to cover the bigger picture that the leader has imposed. And that creates disharmony in the organization. So that is the first understanding. The second understanding is that when you see the bigger picture, try to understand how far you are from that bigger picture. First of all, see the bigger picture. Try to align yourself with the bigger picture. And then try to see how far you are from achieving that bigger picture. And sometimes when you see the bigger picture and you see how far you are, you get scared. Because such a monumental task to achieve that big goal. That is when you have to see each other. You have to see that each one who is a part of the organization, each one who is a part of the community is resourceful. Each one has some resources which we may not have. When we identify the resources of each one of us, one person may be very good in his singing abilities. One person may be very good in his playing abilities. One person may be very good in his managerial abilities. One person may be very good in thinking, not doing anything. That is also required as a part of the bigger picture. So when you see the bigger picture, when you see that you cannot achieve it on your own, try to see who is around you. When you see people who are around you, you get the confidence. Yes, I'm not alone to achieve that goal, but I have a huge group of people who are helping me, pushing me, forcing me to achieve the goal, even if I don't deserve to achieve the goal. And then when you get together your resources and talents and try to achieve the goal, then the most important thing is send the best player for the specific goal. You can't send somebody who is not fit for that goal to achieve a certain goal. So there are long-term goals and short-term goals. When you have a short-term goal, send the person who is best at it, and then you will be able to achieve it. Rather than thinking that I am the best in everything, right? So inspire everybody to achieve, to grow. And the most important thing in our community, which is growing together to achieve a spiritual goal, is that one has to give up one's personal agenda. If one has one's personal agenda ahead of the common agenda, then the personal agenda takes over the common agenda. So here, Brahmaji is being taught a very significant role of not just bewildering him with a small leela that Krishna is trying to show, but Krishna is trying to uncover a bigger picture to Brahmaji, telling him that you don't have just a role of a creator, but you're a role of a leader, of an acharya. Wake up. So, and in fact, in a community, especially in a spiritual community, no role is insignificant. Every person who is living in a community of Vaishnavas has to understand that any role that is given to you is not an insignificant role. It's a very significant role. In fact, some time back, Radhika Vallapuru was mentioning this point about, you know, his perspective of what pujari is. You know, when you're blowing the shank, when you're doing the aarti, one person may be blowing it, but everybody is getting to see it. So the point is, how do we see even an insignificant role as a significant role? That creates harmony in a society. So Brahmaji's role as a creator may be a very significant role. And our role as a cooperator in Brahmaji's creation may be an insignificant role. But every role can be significant when one does it properly. Ramanujacharya, when he was an acharya of the Shri Sampradaya, a very powerful person with, I was saying, thousands of disciples, in spite of that, he decided to take shelter of many, many teachers. One of them was Ghoshtipurna. Now, Ghoshtipurna was a very powerful acharya himself, very, very old compared to Ramanujacharya. But the fact is that Ramanujacharya was the head of the Shri Sampradaya at that point of time. And Ghoshtipurna was one of the people in the Shri Sampradaya, though he was a guru. Ramanujacharya decided to take shelter of Ghoshtipurna. And to take initiation from Ghoshtipurna, Ramanujacharya took with him Kuresh and Dasharathi, his disciples. Now you can imagine, you know, what a situation this is. Here is a spiritual master going to take shelter of another spiritual master and taking his disciples with him. And that spiritual master, Ghoshtipurna, when he sees Ramanujacharya coming to him, he didn't say that you are the most exalted acharya of the Shri Sampradaya. I am happy to have you as my disciple because it will increase my prestige of being a guru, of the guru of all the whole Sampradaya. Ghoshtipurna said, you are not qualified. I can't take you. Ramanujacharya didn't say, you don't understand who I am. I am the acharya of the Sampradaya. If I want, I can remove you from the Sampradaya. He didn't say that. He went back quietly. And Ramanuja came back to Ghoshtipurna, not once, not twice, 18 times requesting initiation. And every time he came with the same mood, with the same request, with the same humility. And Ghoshtipurna, 17 times he rejected him. And the Shri Sampradaya explains that every time Ghoshtipurna rejected Ramanujacharya, it was because of one defect of Ramanuja. And every time Ramanuja came back to Ghoshtipurna, he cleared the defect, perfected himself and came back. And Ghoshtipurna found another defect and sent him back. So the role of a teacher is to find defects in the disciple, and the role of a disciple is to correct it and go back. And Ghoshtipurna, after 18 times, the Lord personally came to Ghoshtipurna and told him, you have to give him initiation. If not, Ghoshtipurna probably would have rejected many more times, and Ramanujacharya would have come back many more times. So here, Ramanuja is trying to show that as an acharya, as the most important person in that sampradaya, he's showing the fact that even the most important person has to sometimes take an insignificant role. So here, Ramanuja was showing with his actions how sometimes to achieve great goals, to achieve great aspirations, one has to become humble and one has to become submissive and no matter what role you're doing, that role is not insignificant, but it's very significant. In fact, in the Ramayana, there is a story of many times in the Ramayana, after Ram came back to Ayodhya, he was a king, many times Ram would get lost. You know, people wouldn't be able to find him. Now, can you imagine the king is lost? You know, and every time Ram would disappear, he would not tell his wife, he would not tell his ministers, he would not tell anyone, just disappear. Of course, you know, this is like, sometimes the leader has to switch off and just disappear so that he can charge himself. And where would Ram go? Ram would be somewhere in some forest, sitting under the lotus feet of some sages and hearing from them. Now, why does Ram have to do that? Ram is the Supreme Lord himself. He is an exalted king himself. And more than that, he has all the knowledge in the world. But Ram is trying to show here that sometimes, not sometimes, all the time one has to go and take shelter of somebody who is a qualified teacher. So the role of hearing from a teacher, the role of hearing from devotees is an insignificant role. Externally speaking, the role of speaking is a significant role. But here Ram is showing that you can't speak all the time. You have to hear a lot also to be able to speak sufficiently. So, you know, the qualification Bhaktisiddhanta found in Srila Prabhupada to be the the acharya of such a huge sampradaya is that he heard sufficiently. So all the time speaking and not sufficiently hearing will make you weak. So Lord Ram is trying to show that one has to play this role of hearing also a lot. Only then you'll be qualified to speak a lot. So one sentence in this purport of Srila Prabhupada, what he's trying to say is that when you try to mystify Krishna, you get yourself mystified. You know. So from time immemorial, you know, if you see from the eternal time point of view, Brahmaji's 311 trillion, 20 billion years is nothing. When, you know, this whole 100 years of Brahmaji, his lifetime of Brahma, is like one breath of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu breathes in once and breathes out once. And in the meanwhile, 311 trillion, four, you know, 20 billion years have passed. Now that's how insignificant Brahmaji's entire life is. And compared to Brahmaji, our life is, we can't even think. You know, probably by the time Brahmaji thinks once, we are dead. You know, so that is the kind of speed at which Brahmaji thinks, you know. And the consciousness of Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha consciousness is that the servant, he never wants to be better than the master. Brahmaji here was trying to play a mystic act on Krishna, trying to show how I can be a better mystic than Krishna. So when Krishna, when you try to mystify Krishna, you get mystified yourself. Brahmaji tried to make Krishna, you know, mystified, and then Krishna played such a googly, you know, we say in Indian language. Googly. Googly means it's just a kind of a complete reversal. You don't know how it happened, but it just happens, right? So Brahmaji played this very mystifying act, and Krishna did something which really mystified Brahmaji also, to the extent, you know, somebody was saying that the four heads of Brahmaji were, you know, whirling around like anything. So in dealings with among devotees, the goal of one's life is to please Krishna, to make Krishna happy. Here, Brahmaji was thinking that I will make Krishna sad by taking away his cows, taking away his calves, to the extent that Krishna will become sad. He'll start crying. Small boys cry. So Brahmaji thought, here's another small boy. Everybody is thinking that he is God. So I'll show that he's a small boy. When I take away all his calves, calves and boys, he will only do nothing but cry. But Krishna is a person who can make everyone cry if he wants to. And he can make everyone smile if he wants to. Now, the way you reciprocate with him, Krishna reciprocates with you. Brahmaji thought, I'll make Krishna cry. Krishna made Brahmaji not just cry, laugh, and everything at the same time. Because Brahmaji just didn't understand what happened. It's very bewildering for Brahmaji. Brahmaji couldn't cry also because he did the right thing. His boys were still there in the cave. But he couldn't laugh also because boys were there also. So Brahmaji was neither able to cry nor able to laugh. If Brahmaji would have laughed if he thought that Krishna is crying. But Brahmaji couldn't laugh because Krishna is not crying over there. And Brahmaji couldn't cry also because he is not wrong. The boys are there. So he did his job of trying to fool Krishna. But he couldn't fool Krishna. Krishna fooled him better. So the role of a devotee, his aspiration should be that, my dear Lord, I want to make you happy. But when the devotee thinks that I am better than the Lord and I want to be happy, then Krishna has to perform some mystic powers. So here, in the life of Srila Prabhupada, if you study, Srila Prabhupada is constantly in this mood that I am not great. Krishna is great. And anybody who becomes connected to Krishna becomes great. So Prabhupada, he had so many disciples. But his prayer was that he is waiting for one disciple to become better than him so that he can deliver him. Prabhupada never thought that I made them disciples. Prabhupada was thinking that I connected them to Krishna and they became so much purified that they can connect me to Krishna better. That's how a devotee thinks. And a person who is even a little arrogant, a little puffed up and a little proud, he starts thinking that I can fool Krishna. Story of Lord Ram's pastime, when Ram was completely bewildered, you know, Krishna is in a bewilderment. Brahmaji is in a bewilderment state. But another story where Lord Ram is trying to search for Mother Sita, He is crying. He's completely mad with emotions that he has lost Mother Sita. And in that, you know, endeavor of trying to search for Mother Sita, he's talking to trees, talking to birds, talking to animals, talking to practically everything he could see. Lord Shiva and Parvati Devi were passing on top. And Parvati saw Lord Ram and she got bewildered. She thought, come on, why is Ram behaving like this? Lord Shiva told her, don't interfere in Lord Ram's pastimes. You can't understand, I can't understand. Let him continue his pastimes. Parvati Devi told Lord Shiva that, you know, just give me some time, I'll come back. So she thought that she is going to bewilder Lord Ram and see what happens to actually understand if this person is really God or no. Sometimes these pastimes of the Lord are so mystifying, so bewildering that even exalted devotees get bewildered. What to speak of you and me? Understanding Sharad Purnima, what happens in the Sharad Purnima night? Come on, who are we to understand what happens in Sharad Purnima night? If Brahmaji can't understand what happens in the day of Krishna, we are trying to understand what happens in the night of Krishna. It's impossible. So Brahmaji, so here Parvati Devi was thinking that I'm going to find out why Lord Ram is acting like this, and is he acting or is he, you know, actually feeling the emotions, or is he God at all? Lord Shiva told her, don't go. Danger zone. Entering into Krishna's leelas and trying to change Krishna's leelas according to your desire, danger zone. So Krishna has so many plans that he executes through his great devotees. And if we think that our plan is better than Krishna's plan and we put our proposal, very dangerous. Accept Krishna's proposal as it comes and be happy serving in that way. If we try to interfere with Krishna's proposals, very dangerous. So Parvati Devi, she took the form of Sita. Ram was madly searching for Mother Sita, and suddenly, you know, Sita came, Parvati Devi, who was dressed like Sita, exactly looking like Sita in every aspect, came and stood in front of Ram. Now she thought, Ram is going to get bewildered. Ram is going to be happy seeing that Sita has come. And, you know, these emotions that Ram is showing of crying and so much of his endeavor that he's putting in, Parvati wanted to see what's going to happen. Just imagine how perfect a role that Ram is playing. As soon as Ram sees Sita standing there, Parvati, who's come as Sita standing there, immediately the emotions changed 200 times. Here he was crying, he was, you know, in exhaustion, he was, you know, like a madman searching for his wife. And as soon as he comes in front of this fake Sita, he becomes sober. He becomes the same Maryada Purushottam. Extremely regal, extremely sober, and extremely stable. No emotions. And he folds his hands and he asks Parvati, my dear mother, what can I do for you? Where is Lord Shiva? What are you doing alone over here? Parvati Devi, just imagine the embarrassment of what she is facing. Parvati, she doesn't know what to speak. She just gets so bewildered and she prays to Lord Ram and comes back quickly to her husband. Lord Shiva tells her, I told you not to go. So here, Brahmaji is exactly in the same position as Parvati here. Embarrassed thoroughly. Thoroughly embarrassed. Going to be embarrassed, actually. But already he's embarrassed by the time he's seeing all the thousands of the gopas and the calves. So pride is actually a sin. Brahmaji here in this particular role, what he's playing, it's of course the pastime of the Lord. Brahmaji is playing this role. He's playing the role of a proud devotee. Pride is a sin that comes in a devotee's life. And when somebody is proud, it's like living a very synthetic life. You know, today's world is a plastic world. You know, it's a synthetic world. Because everything around us is plastic. What is the meaning of plastic? Plastic means no emotions. You cannot show emotions only. Like we were in Srirangam, we wanted to buy a small deity of Ranganath. And, you know, we found different varieties of deities. And what I actually observed is that there were few deities who were made of plaster of Paris. And I saw the facial features and the way in which they were carved. Absolutely no emotions. Absolutely no emotions in the deity. And then I saw a wooden deity. And then I saw a metal deity. Amazing emotions. Then we saw the original stone deity made of Ranganath. Amazing emotions. Why? Stone, wood, metal. These are not synthetic. These are natural. So when there's pride in the heart of a devotee, he becomes synthetic, very unnatural, and he tends to, you know, do bhakti also in a synthetic way. So Brahmaji here is trying to live life as a devotee with pride in his heart, very synthetic. So Krishna wanted to remove that plastic look of Brahma and get the natural look. And the natural look of Brahma is on his feet, bowing down Lord Krishna, begging for forgiveness. That is the natural look of a devotee. But the synthetic look of a devotee is that I am big, I am significant, I am important. So Krishna, whenever there is pride, he tries to humble. In today's world, every beggar is proud of what he has or what she has. And we as beggars in front of the Lord, we cannot think that we are significant, especially we are beggars in front of the devotees of the Lord. We think that we are better than any devotee, then we are like Brahma, putting on a synthetic role, synthetic face. So, when somebody is proud, he can do any kind of damage. Again, the story in Srirangam of this one Pujari, when Ramanujacharya became the head of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, he became so proud, he became this Pujari. This Pujari was very proud of the fact that he was the head priest of the whole Srirangam. You can imagine, of course now, not so many people go, but at that point of time, Srirangam was one of the most prominent cities, holy places. And this person was the head priest of that holy place. And when Ramanujacharya became the head of that organization, of the community, this man, he was being threatened because Ramanujacharya was becoming very popular. Purity attracts a lot of attention also. And when there is purity, people want to run towards somebody who is pure. And people are naturally running towards Ramanuja. And here, this Pujari was feeling insecure. And insecurity, when combined with pride, can be a devastation. So when this Pujari was insecure and he was proud, he said, the only way I can remove this insecurity and give vent to my pride is if I can eliminate Ramanuja. So he told his wife, he called Ramanuja for a lunch at home. And he told his wife that mix some poison in the food. The wife also was very happy to do it. She did it. But as soon as the wife saw Ramanuja, her heart completely melted. And Ramanuja sat down to have food. His wife told Ramanuja, go away from here. This food is mixed with poison. And Ramanuja went away. Then he went to this Pujari. And the Pujari next day, he mixed poison in Charanamrit. You can imagine, Charanamrit is supposed to be Amrit, nectar from the lotus feet of the Lord, and to have the audacity to mix poison in Charanamrit. Why? Because there was poison in his heart. The poison in his heart came out in the form of the poison in the Charanamrit. And Ramanuja, he put out his hand to receive the Charanamrit. And he was praying to the Lord very sincerely, that my dear Lord, I am accepting this Charanamrit as Charanamrit. Let this give me nectar. So this Pujari gave, and then Ramanuja drank it, and the Pujari thought that he's going to die. Ramanuja walked back, and he was sweating. He was, you know, crying. He was laughing. All the kind of ecstatic symptoms were manifesting in the Ramanujacharya. And this Pujari is thinking, very good. He's dying. You know, all the symptoms of death are manifesting in Ramanuja. And the next day, Ramanuja came back as he is. And this Pujari realized that I played with fire. Just like Brahmaji realized that I played with fire here. And his play, Brahmaji's play, is like a glowworm playing in front of the sun. So this Pujari, he was thinking that I'm playing with fire. He fell down at the feet of Ramanuja. He started banging his head on the ground. All over his head, blood was coming. He started beating his chest. He was bleeding all over. And then finally, Ramanuja realized that this person is repenting sincerely. And Ramanuja gave him shelter. And this man got completely purified eventually. So the ingredients of what a perfect leadership is to see that one has to tolerate each other's opinions. The Pandavas, they were fighting internally, but once they agreed on an agenda, they never fought. They were together. And another quality of a person who is a proud, prideless leader is that he has the patience to allow people time to change. Because if people are wrong, they take the time to change. But if a leader is demanding, he feels that people have to change now. It requires patience to allow a person to change. And then a leader also has to be forgiving because
Here's the thing, if Krishna has forgiven me of unlimited sins that I have done, then why can't I forgive others of the small, insignificant sins that they do? Brahmaji is being forgiven here by Krishna because of, it's not a small sin, it's a very big sin. But still, Krishna doesn't think it to be very significant. So Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is to actually, you know, Mayadevi, her role is to inflate our ego. It's like a balloon, you know, pumping. And pride is the air that goes into the balloon. So Mayadevi is doing the role of inflating our false ego. And what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing? He has a pin in his hand, poking all egos, you know. Therefore, Trinathapati Shunichena is like a pin, just pokes the false ego. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has a kind of a, not a trishul, but a two-folded, two-type, double-edged pin. The one edge of this pin is the holy name. If you keep holy name as the center, then quarrel will be removed. And if you keep service to Vaishnavas and humility as the center, then hypocrisy will be removed. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes around with this double-edged pin, just poking people, inflating, bursting their egos. And therefore, Brahmaji's role over here is a very significant role because he's teaching us how one should not be proud of what he is doing, but at the same time, one should be aligned with the desire of Krishna. How to keep Krishna happy? I'll just conclude with a very interesting example. We have to keep reinstating the fact that Krishna is the center. How do you do that? Just like in science, in our childhood, I remember we should do an experiment of how to take an iron rod and magnetize it. And our teacher would tell us, keep rubbing the magnet in the same direction, you know. Keep rubbing the magnet in the same direction. When you keep it rubbing it in the same direction, then the poles will align to one side. Then, you know, one side will form the north and one side will form the south. So similarly, one has to keep reinstating the same fact that Krishna is the center, Krishna is the center, Krishna is the center. And along with reinstating the fact that Krishna is the center, we have to stay together in a strong current of Krishna Katha. And when we stay together in the strong current of Krishna Katha, all the tough edges or the rough edges will get smoothened and will become, you know, more smooth. So one becomes magnetized with Krishna's goal only if we keep studying the fact that Krishna is the center and aligning ourselves towards that center and also keeping ourselves in a strong current of Krishna Katha. You know, magnetization requires current also sometimes. And another thing is that one should remember that if we actually want to please Krishna, one should not think that I am the cause. We should think that in spite of me, so many good things are happening. And many times we think that I am preaching or I am doing this, I am doing that. The fact is that we should actually think that in spite of me, so many good things are happening. That's the greatness of Krishna. So only when we become a conductor of Krishna's mercy and not an insulator, you know, holding the mercy at one level, we can actually please the Lord and please the Vaishnavas, please the devotees of the Lord. So here, Brahmaji's insignificance in the form of this example of how a glowworm glowing in the light of the day shows us that we should not be like glowworms trying to think that I am competing with Krishna, but rather be like insignificant worms which don't really glow. That means don't really show their pride, but they are cooperating and contributing towards the will of the Lord. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Any question? Mic? Hare Krishna. The mic is coming. Okay. Thank you very much, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Your question, Roji?
I wanted to make a comment.
Oh, yeah. Prabhuji has a comment to make.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for those wonderful realizations, Prabhu. Your realizations about the plastic and about thinking that of pride. One thing I do when I'm preaching, I always tell people that if you think you know everything and you know better than everybody else, there's only one thing that can happen. Your false ego will get the better of you. It'll become puffed up like a balloon. And you know what's going to happen after that? Somewhere, someday, somehow, somewhere. And they're going to burst your false ego balloon. And then you know what's going to happen after that. There's also only one thing that's going to happen after that. It's going to teach you how to become humble. Because without humility, you can succeed at nothing. So that's the realization that I had about not being pride. It's about understanding what our real ego is. And then the other comment I want to make, please, was right in the beginning, when you were talking about the glowworm, and you're talking about why the glowworm glows to attract the mate. But aren't we, as devotees who are preaching Krishna consciousness in the service of Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON movement, aren't we also like glowworms? That when we preach what Prabhupada has taught us, people become attractive to us and we start glowing. So that's the...
Prabhuji is absolutely right. We are like glowworms, we attract people to us. But when as glowworms, we attract people to us, we have to show that we are not really the light. The light is the sun. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, jai.